The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on August 3, 1994 in Copenhagen, South Africa. The class begins with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 4, Verse 34.
Is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord, therefore, advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of the cyclic succession from the Lord Himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of the cyclic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the cyclic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path, nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master. To receive the knowledge, such a spiritual knowledge should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. When he sees a genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation of purport of chapter 4, text 34. Om Tat Sat. Very important verse of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna is directly instructing Arjuna and telling him that he should accept his spiritual master. This is for everyone. In other words, this is the process, the disciplic succession from guru to disciple, to become guru then to disciple on this way. Prabhupada called it this principle of disciplic succession. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process. The process is disciplic succession. Sometimes people manufacture some other process other than the disciplic succession, but here Prabhupada clearly says that no manufacturing process is acceptable. The process which has been practiced in the past should be continued, which should also be practiced in the present and future. This is the principle of disciplic succession. In the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it mentions that disciples should be sure about the guru before initiation. And the guru is representing the previous acharyas. And the guru should test the disciple and be sure that the disciple has a sincere and genuine desire for spiritual life. Said that testing period may be from 1 to 3 years. One verse that says 1 year, another verse says up to 3. So, nowadays the fashion in India is like, some gurus, they just go on this year, everybody initiation. Kind of blindly. And, so well, if you can follow the rules or something, do whatever you can do. Try to come up to the standard. But that's not the system that's recommended. Because there's no surrender. There's no surrender, there's no testing to see whether the disciple is genuine, whether they really have an interest in spiritual life. So this kind of very cheap accumulation of disciples without any testing, without any verification that the disciple has a genuine spiritual desire, etc. This is really not recommended by the previous acharyas, by the Vedas. So Srila Prabhupada set up the International Society of Krishna Consciousness to follow very carefully the principles given by the Six Goswamis, especially by Rupa Goswami. So all these principles are adhered to. We have a waiting period. First, someone, if they after 6 months of chanting and following sadhana bhakti, then they can choose a spiritual master, they can approach a spiritual master and say, I would like to study under you, prepare myself to be your disciple. Minimum 6 months, some people wait years. And then the spiritual master may preliminarily accept that candidate, aspirant, under the shelter. And then for at least another 6 months, a total of 1 year, 6 months of precedence, you know, directly 6 months under the guru, but he gets to report for the whole year. And this way there's a testing period. Right now, in India, ISKCON has, the Krishna Conscious Movement has one of the, if not the, one of the most, one of the highest standards of initiation amongst all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and general Vaishnava groups. And people, they mentioned of it. This kind of has a really high standard. Sometimes the other groups come and offer someone waiting to be initiated. But if you take from our group, we'll give you Harinam and Brahmana, first, second initiation, right away. Just come and take from us. So the person doesn't know where you are. I said, wow, first and second, right away. Bargain, right? Good deal, right? So in our congregational preaching, this is the kind of tactics some people are using. But the more sober-minded people, they can understand that if a guru has to lower the price just to attract disciples, then it doesn't say very much for the value of their product. The point is to actually get people back to home, back to Godhead, to get them back to Krishna, and that's the whole point. You know the example of the blind son-in-law and the cow. See, there was a... It's customary for the son-in-laws to go and visit their father-in-law, but this particular son-in-law happened to be blind. And he dressed up in his best clothes and he went off to go to his father-in-law's house. Trying to find his way. After a long way asking and finding, then he asked one person on the road if he knew this house. And said, "Oh, I know very well. In fact, I'm a cowherd boy and I have a cow here from that house. So can you take me to my father-in-law's house?" So, "No, no, if I take you, who will take care of all the cows? The cows are going to be scattered everywhere. I have to watch the cows." "So, but I want to get to my father-in-law's house. Please help me. Can't you do anything to help me?" "Well, I tell you what. Here, I have the cow here of your father-in-law. You just hang on to the tail. And the cow will lead you to his house. What could be easier?" Pretty good idea. So, he said, "One thing though, whatever you do, don't let go. Just keep holding on and eventually you'll get to the father-in-law's house." Okay, so then he grabbed on the tail of the cow, held it real tight. Now the cow didn't know why somebody's grabbing on my tail. So the cow kicked the blind man. When he kicked him, then actually the blind man, "Ah!" He pulled. When he pulled on the tail, then the cow, boom, ran on. So here the lion is holding on the tail and is being dragged along behind the cow. And the cow is totally freaked out because somebody's hanging on to the tail. So he goes right into the forest and there's all thorns and everything, ripping his shirt, ripping out. "Ah! Oh!" Then the cow runs over the stones and boom, boom, ah, ooh, ah, ah, ooh, ah, just smashing everywhere. And then finally, after, you know, a very difficult ride, the cow comes home to the father-in-law's house. And the servant sees, here's some, you know, very filthy man, ripped clothes, bloody, holding on to the cow's tail. It must be a cow thief. "Thief, thief!" Took his stick, cow, house, house, beating the guy like, top everything else, he's being beaten by his own father-in-law, servant, and the father-in-law comes up, "No, no, it's my son-in-law. What happened to you? You know, my goodness." So, was it a good idea? Still think a good idea. Good, serious. So, you understand the moral of the story? One thing, don't follow blindly. You see, the whole point is here that he was finally following blindly, that's for sure. He was blind. Apart from that, we have to have an appropriate guide. You know, holding on the tail of a cow is not exactly what you would say to be very surefire a guide. Who knows? Lucky the cow even went to the house. We could have gone anywhere. So, plus all the suffering he had to go through, the cow is not conscious about what. So they have to have a proper process and a proper guide, not just some speculative thing. So the cow is like taking shelter of a non-bona fide spiritual master. They're going to drag you all over the place. And you have to suffer so much. One needs to take shelter of the disciplic succession and follow the procedure given, authorized by Sadhu, Shastra and Guru. And this way one can avoid unnecessary difficulties. Even though someone might recommend or try to like attract or whatever by some. But if it's the shortcuts are not helpful. You want to find what is the bona fide path and then follow it. So that's why Srila Prabhupada, he was always preaching, find a bona fide spiritual master, follow the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. This is very important. Comes to mind You know how Ramchandra Kaviraj took shelter of Srinivasacharya? Very good example. Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur, they were seated in Jajigram, the house, the ashram of Srinivasacharya. They're seated under a big banyan tree, chanting their japa and discussing Krishna conscious topics. And a huge procession, a big wedding procession came along. Procession. In those days, they would take the bridegroom to the house of the bride in a royal way, either on a horse or on a palanquin or in some very opulent ways. Like, so he was being carried by bearers in a palanquin. So many bearers and a little, you know, everyone knows what a palanquin is, one of those things carry on your shoulder. Band going in front, whatever, playing Indian music, Indian band. But some band and music and flags and the big procession. And they're seeing this procession going, just having the bearers, they're a little tired carrying the guy in the palanquin. So that under the banyan tree, they just put down the palanquin for a few minutes to rest. Right next to, just, you know, so far from Narottam and Srinivasacharya. And they see that this Ramchandra, he's very handsome. Very handsome young man. Very beautiful to look at. And one of them said that someone with so, you know, beauty like that, personal beauty like that, should not be simply wasted on sense gratification, but rather should be used in the service of Krishna. And then the other said, yes, without serving Krishna, life is simply a total waste, misfall, fruitless effort. A few words they said, I mean, how long, you know, the bear just resting for a few minutes, you know. And he heard everything they were saying about him. And they picked him up and the band went out. He just was thinking, you know, what am I doing? Why am I wasting my life? Why am I going on with this? And by the time he reached the destination, he was already convinced that he was in total maya and he better go and take shelter of Srinivasacharya. And they were surprised as soon as they got to the destination here. He jumped out of the thing and ran back. He showed up in the ashram of Srinivasacharya and offered his obeisances and said, I want to surrender. You know, the parents are looking, you know, where did he go? The rich parents, you know, so they're trying to find out where the son went. And this way he took shelter of a spiritual master. Then there's also, so in this way, then Ramchandra Kaviraj, he became like a very constant companion with Narottam Das Thakur. And they were preaching, you know, Narottam was the crown prince of a kingdom, but he abdicated the throne. He denied, he said, I'm not interested. I don't want anything to do with being a king. I just want to serve Krishna in devotional service. So his cousin brother, Sanjay, his uncle's son, in other words, his father's younger brother's son, he became the next heir apparent. And he was coronated instead. He was a devotee also, but So Narottam, he was very much loved by all the people. He was, so his father requested, please stay here. And even after his father passed away and his cousin brother became a king, so he still extended all support, so that kingdom was completely providing all the facilities, every government aid possible for preaching Krishna consciousness. So, Naratam and Ramchandra Kaliraj, who by this time, just after many 7 years, he had become very qualified preacher. So they were preaching and they had convinced many people about Krishna consciousness. So it just happened that one day, you know that how Shivananda Bhattacharya's children, they got initiation? You know that example? The famous Shivananda Bhattacharya, the famous Mayavadi Shakta worshipper, worshipped the Devi. You know that story. So anyway, his two children had two young men, boys, who were, he had sent them out with, to get some goats, male goats, and some buffaloes to offer in a Durga Puja which was coming up the next few weeks. So, Naratam and Ramchandra Kavi was walking along, and they saw in front that here's two very well-to-do Brahmana, rich Brahmana boys, young men, maybe 20s or something, and they were accompanied with some servants, and they had like this herd of animals. And they said, it would be very, very nice. These young, you know, nice young men could be devotees of Krishna. We could just talk to them. I'm sure we could convince them. So, but they'll never listen to us because you know, they're being brahmanas. If we just go up to them, they're not going to listen to us. So then they had a plan. So they walked right behind the brahman boys, and maybe 10 feet behind them. And they started having a mock argument. One was taking the position of, you know, a little bit in Maya, a little, and another was preaching to him. You know. I mean, what's wrong with offering goats and buffaloes to Goddess Kali? This is part of the Hindu Dharma. It's authorized in the Vedas. He said, no, but that is, pravritti marga. That is simply an option given to people who are not able to come up to the higher spiritual path. They're dead set on eating meat, so they're given some facility. But they have to, they're going back and forth. He said, no, but, anyway, what's the, I mean, a brahmana is much higher than a Vaishnava, isn't it? No, a brahmana is meant to worship Vishnu. Vishnu is the supreme personality of Godhead. So the most advanced stage of brahmana is to be a Vaishnava. But isn't this life meant to be, just have, you know, be happy and sense gratification? I mean, what's wrong with enjoying the senses, you know, in some religious way, you know? So no, the purpose of life is to actually serve Krishna and to get full spiritual happiness. To realize the self, like this, so they're going, you know, like you can get the feel of it. They were, you know, maybe for an hour they were playing this game. Back and forth, covering all different kind of topics. And I was like one saying, well, what about this? What about that? Other one, oh, absolutely. And so the Brahmin voice is like, you know, like, what are they talking about? They're like, oh, listening, you know. After hearing them discuss all the different topics for about an hour, and that was enough. They were quite intelligent men, boys, youths. So then the youths, when they got close to the river, they started talking. I wonder who these are. Maybe they're Naratam and Ramchandra. Tell you that we've heard so much about them. Well, what they said, it's completely true. Our father is completely in line. This caste Brahmanin is really very neophyte stage compared to pure Vaishnava. I think we should accept Narottam, and we should accept them as our gurus and get training from them. They'll never accept us. Look at, we got all these goats and buffaloes. Isn't it shameful? I said, yes, we should get rid of these. So then he told his servants, you take these to the river and let them all loose. I said, what do you mean? What's your father going to say? You go and tell them, listen, we're in charge of you right now. We're telling you, let them free, then you go and tell our parents that we'll come back later. It's not your responsibility, don't worry about it. And they went and they asked, paid obeisances and said, you'd like to know who you two great souls are? I said, this is Narottam Das Thakur, this is Ramchandra Thakur. So would you accept us as your disciples? Would you accept us as your students who want to study under you? So then, they let them stay in the ashram. That's it. They stayed there for some time. They studied all the Vaishnava texts under them. They were thoroughly trained in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then, after a considerable time, they requested that they could get initiated. And then finally they were initiated after being quite well trained. So in this way, then they went home to see their father. So here they come, Vaishnav, Tilak, Sika, Kunti. Nice chugger, everything. When they came in to see their father, offered him respect, he looked at them and said, Kulangars! Like, disgrace of our family! What you have done! Oh, how could you come before me with one of these horrible marks on your face? You have become Vaishnavas! Horrible! Wipe it off immediately! This is a disgrace! We are Brahmanas. We are proud of Brahmanas. We worship Shakti, not Vishnu. And then they start with, but Father, Shakti is the Shakti of who? Shakti of Vishnu. You're talking, you're preaching to your father. I am your father, you're telling me. No, insult on injury. I have to hear my own children preaching to me. Please, spare me. So he said, look, I know you're not going to listen to me. I'm not going to listen to you. But I'm going to bring Brahmanas here. They all will convince you what you're doing is wrong. He called some pundits in the village. You come, convince these boys. Look at them. They've gone the wrong way. He says, sir, according to the Vedas, Brahmana means who is worshipping Vishnu. The suras and this, they give so many quotes and everything. So we are now worshipping Vishnu. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, every Brahmana should worship Vishnu. Vishnu is the Samanvarnam. Then they gave so many quotes. And then those pundits said, what he says is right. And then they became Vaishnavas, Punatira. And the father is like, you know, this worthless pundit here. He said, you know, what a worthless. So then he had a friend who was a Digvijay from Mithila, famous champion debater Brahmana. He would go everywhere, challenge and defeat them. What was his name? Mukunda or something. Anyway, he was from Mithila, Digvijay. So he sent a message that this way my sons have been, you know, convinced to become Hare Krishna, so become Vaishnavas. You have to come and preach to them and convince them that what they're doing is wrong. And this, you know, this is like number one pundit in the whole of that part of India. He said, I'm going to go and talk to your son. You have one of the, beneath my dignity, to just talk to some boys. You have one of some big Vaishnava, Acharya or some big Vaishnav, Pandit come, they're out to debate with him, and they're going to debate with some youth. So then there was one Vaishnava, one Bhagavan Acharya, Bhagavat Acharya was living nearby there. And it was a nice story. He was very favorable to Narottam. Not as senior as Narottam does time ago in terms of learning and everything, but he was well situated in the philosophy. So he agreed to, I'll debate with this big Vijayan from the Tila, no problem. So then the big Vijaya came, and the Sivananda Bhattacharya said, now finally we're going to see the end of these Vaishnavas, you know, it's like, my sons will see how this Vaishnavism is there. Nothing to stand up compared to Brahman worship. So you can say, I mean, in India, the preaching was very heavy in the beginning. There was a lot of opposition. Wasn't like, was the acharyas had to really face many, many obstacles. Now here, in this verse he read today, it says we should go to a guru, make submissive inquiry, and get the truth from him. This is the process of spiritual exchange. But what happened here, this debate, you know, you're wrong, I'm right. This is not the way of spiritual exchange. So generally debating is avoided by Vaishnavas, but sometimes there's no avoiding and you have to do it just for the defense of the Supreme Succession. So what happened is that Digvijaya, he met Balaramacharya. He made his points. And Balaramacharya, he said, you know, this person doesn't know anything about Vaishnava tattvas, true side of Vaishnava. He gave so many quotes from different Vedas, how worshipping Vishnu, what is the relationship, how we should worship the Supreme Lord Vishnu, how worshipping Vishnu is the purpose of all the Vaishnavas and all the Brahmanas. And a Brahmana who doesn't worship Vishnu, he's not to be even considered as a Brahmana in good standing. So then, this Digvijaya, he never even heard of these verses. He was just kind of debating in his own circle. He never really came in contact with a Vaishnava who knew the Shastra. And then he was like completely speechless. He didn't have any ammunition to defend against. It was just so clear, the logic and everything, it was so clear that he was defeated in about 5 minutes. And it was taking maybe 10-15 minutes and he was already defeated. And he was, in those days, if you were defeated, normally the rule was you would accept the person who defeated you as your guru and study under them. But he was so proud that he couldn't remain as the big Vijaya, the big conqueror, because he just got defeated. But neither was he sincere enough to surrender and just take Bhagavad Acharya as his guru. So then he said, I'm going to take the third way. Now I took off his, like he had a special gold charger that he was wearing as the champion and took it off. It's like taking off your belt from the took it off. Now I'm just going to wander as a mendicant and beg, you know, it's like I've lost. My life is failure. Depression again went off. So this is Kali Yuga. People don't have the character to accept that if they're wrong, to learn from the person who's right. That's why generally this debating is not very productive, because people are so much into winning that when they lose, they don't accept the, you know, it's like they're just hung up, it's like they're frustrated. And they don't accept the opposing side. So Narottam Das Thakur, he didn't like to get into debates. You can easily defeat them. What's the use? I mean, if you defeat them, they feel defeated, depressed. And the whole point is to convince them. But if you want to convince someone, if they're really in a challenging mood, it's very difficult to convince someone. They have to come, at least listen, and have a proper exchange, hearing, and so on. So this didn't happen, and the Digvijaya went off like that. when Shivananda Bhattacharya saw that finally the last hope, the Digvijaya, got defeated, he just cracked. Became incoherent and just like, so the son said, anyway, there's no use staying around here. So they went back and stayed in the ashram with Narottam Das Thakur and Ramchandra Kaviraj. It was interesting because here there were two gurus together. By that time, Ramchandra Kaviraj also had become authorized to be a guru. And they had respect for both of them. So when they had taken initiation, they said, well, how to choose? Like, I have so much faith in both. So then they decided, you take from one, I take from the other. But the other will be your Shiksha Guru, and he'll be my Shiksha Guru. So. And they treated each one equally. This kind of unique thing that was mentioned there. So there was total harmony in the ashram. So we see many examples where the same principle that's given here, take shelter of one of the spiritual master, serve the spiritual master, make inquiry, surrender to the spiritual master. So that's the principle. And we should be clear when we hear something in the Guru, we don't understand it, then we have to make inquiry. What does it mean? You see, now, sometimes we may be in a particular circumstance and we ask the Guru what to do. And for that moment, then the Guru says, okay, you can do it like this. Later on, circumstances may change if we ask the Guru then. So some things are based upon time and the place and the circumstance. And other things are philosophical, which are on a higher level, which are always the same. Discussion on the truth. So Prabhupada says, unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees a genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In other words, it's the duty of the disciple to demonstrate the genuine spiritual desire. But sometimes now you find devotees or neophyte devotees come and ask questions. Why aren't I fired up? Why don't I have a taste for chanting? Why am I in Maya? You know, it's like it's the guru's fault because they've somehow. Where actually, that's the very thing that we have to beware of. We have to be very careful not to allow our spiritual life to degenerate into that type of precarious situation where we lose our enthusiasm. Our desire to be Krishna conscious should be, we may be weak, we may have difficulty, but we should focus in the desire to be Krishna conscious. If that's not there, then it's very difficult for the spiritual master to train the disciple. An example is given that a spiritual master is like the cow that gives the milk, and the disciple is like the calf. Now the calf has got more desire to get the milk from the cow than the cow does to give the milk to the calf. Although there is quite a reciprocation. Cows are quite eager to give their milk, but you don't usually see the cows running after the calf, trying to put the, you know, it's the other way around. I mean, occasionally, you know, the cow may move, you know, it's like tying, you know, let the calf. But it's the calf that does the running and takes the initiative. So it's like that. It's the disciple has to have the desire for spiritual life. Like the guru can't force anyone to desire to be Krishna conscious. That's something that through association, through preaching, one develops that desire. And then with that desire, the guru can guide how to progress in the path of spiritual life. So the most important thing to protect is that desire. If the desire is sincere and genuine, then the Guru will always give mercy and remove different obstacles. So the most important thing in spiritual life, the first thing is loading the very strong desire to be Krishna conscious. If you lose that, then we're in real trouble. The whole process of devotional service, practicing sadhana bhakti, by mercy of Lord Chaitanya, actually kindles that fire, that desire to be Krishna conscious. And when it's kindled, when it's flaming, so then the Guru is given shelter and initiation and so on. And the disciple has to be very careful to maintain that desire, avoid hearing and performing anything offensive, avoid the bad association. And sometimes somebody falls in difficulty, just as we discussed this morning in Stockholm. Lord Chaitanya, when it was last night, picked up the Krishna Das from the bad association he was in by the Sikha and pulled him out. He was in South India. But that's a rare situation. That's special mercy. It's the disciple's duty to remain clinging, probably to say, hold on to the lotus feet of Guru and Gauranga. Hold on to the lotus feet of Nitya and Gaura. Still, the Guru is so mercifully so kind that he also lifts the disciple up and help. But there's both sides of it. The disciple should have a desire, and then the Guru gives his mercy, Krishna gives the mercy. The combination produces the success. Not like the kitten philosophy or the baby monkey philosophy. So, it's a very important verse. When the student is submissive and always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Jai Gaura ki
jai.
Bhagavad Gita ki
jai.
Any questions? Yes, Maharaj.
It seems to me that when one is nearsighted, it's very difficult to understand anything. So it seems like mostly it depends on Krishna's mercy. Whether Krishna's mercy, like the person to be the Guru, but it's very difficult to understand the rules for the church. So how do we know if you're nearsighted? I mean, how is it possible to understand the position around the cover?
Well, just like Arjuna asked Krishna, what are the symptoms of a self-realized soul? What does he do? How does he walk? What does he look like? So then Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita also, what are the qualifications? What are the symptoms you could find in a self-realized soul? Just like if they lose something material, they don't get in depression. If they gain something, they don't get, you know, intoxicated with joy. They're equiposed in fame and infamy and winning and losing and gaining and losing. So many different symptoms were mentioned by Krishna, how you could recognize someone. So that's why, you know, if someone, this first time you see someone, they say, hey, well, take initiation, and then you never know, it's already too late. Right? But if you're with someone for a period of time, then you might see. You can see whether they have the qualifications mentioned, whether they inspire you. They should be inspire you in your Krishna consciousness, wherever the candidate is. Definitely it's very difficult, but that much discrimination, one has to pray to Krishna and the previous acharyas to get that much discrimination. So who is most appropriate? Who gives devoted the most inspiration, helps to eradicate the maya. But each individual may be different. Maybe in one case it may be many qualified spiritual masters, but someone may just happen to be a little more, give more inspiration to that particular individual. This way it's said that by the mercy of Krishna one gets guru. That's truer. But if one is sincere, then Krishna will lead one to a sincere. And one will keep sincere souls somehow on the path, no matter what. So it's recommended to pray to Krishna. One person told me that they went to one very famous temple to Mother Durga in a very holy place. Says any sacrifices performed there. 1/4 of the mantras, if you chant there, is equal 4 times. Like if you get some mystic power or something, you need to chant 100,000 Shakti mantras, you can chant 25,000 to get it. So many people are going there praying for Shakti, praying for powers, praying for this, for that, you know. And he's seeing everybody praying and making all these notes, like, they worshipping the demigod. Many people usually go with so many material desires. But his desire, sincerely, was he wanted a bona fide spiritual master. So he just prayed that, I know you are a Vaishnavi, and if you're giving people so many benedictions, my request is if you could just give me a benediction, I want a bona fide spiritual master. So many gurus. It's hard for me to understand who is bona fide. So please bless me. I want to reach Krishna in this lifetime. Then that night, I had an amazing dream, you know, with Prabhupada. We never met Prabhupada. But the figure came into it, and other things which were revealed by the mother. And then he was looking for ISKCON. And eventually, you know, he didn't know ISKCON, he just knew that, okay, this was the guru I met. And then he somehow got one of Prabhupada's pictures. Ah, there it is! That's a picture I saw! This one, you know. Where's the picture? Anyway, everyone knows Prabhupada's picture. Don't put it in there.
It takes long to pull
it. Oh, it took it out. That's
okay.
Would have got this boogie. Would have kept looking, right?
Back color.
Now, sometimes many people, I mean, we've met, you know, many people, they do take, they accept somehow or another, they get the wrong spiritual master. Later on, when they realize, in fact, I was just preaching in North, in Bengal. Some people came and they're asking for initiation. And I said, you know, I get special forms I have people fill out. One of them was, like, have you ever been initiated before? So on the form, they tick yes. So I said, have you been initiated before? Who were you initiated by? And then they said, well, we had a kind of a sahaja guru, and he used to come to our house, and he used to say, you know, and I don't know, pollute your conscience, anyway. The things he did were like unbelievable. One of the things was like, you know, cook non-veg food, fish, and things like that, all kinds of horrible. And they thought this was like, you know, the guru should be offered the best. What could be better than, you know, fish? For poor people, it's very expensive in Bengal. Fish is a very luxurious thing, so it's like a big fish or something. It's very expensive. So you should offer the best. It's expensive. But then they got Prabhupada's books and they read and they said, this guy, he said, you know, our guru is not bona fide. He's not following the form of goodness. He's not giving us any spiritual instruction. And they realized, they said, Guru came and said, why are you doing like this? So I said, once he heard that ISKCON was there, the guy just like ran off. He says, now it doesn't even, like when he comes by the village, kind of walks around. And they know that Namhat is there, these Mayavadis and Sajjas, they kind of all run away. So, but because these people were sincere, they didn't know. This is what, you know, this was the guru that was, you know, presented to them, and they thought this was bona fide. But once they read in the Shastra and they could see that this guru is supposed to be representing Krishna, supposed to be in the mode of goodness, it's parampara, and they said, he's smoking, he's, you know, he does everything you're not supposed to do. He's like a complete Kali chela. He's a disciple of Kali, representing Kali, not representing Krishna. So when they realized that, then they rejected that false guru, so-called guru, and they wanted to take shelter of this guy. So that may happen, someone may make a mistake. But if they're sincere, then they'll continue, and Krishna will provide them a bona fide spiritual master that will continue to, that will take them back to Krishna. But that's why we're trying to present people, read the books, understand what is it, and they can use it to whatever extent they have. That much discrimination, they try to make the best choice that they can, and then they can proceed forward. So most people, even in India, they don't read the books. Out of some sentiment, they just accept someone. And then later on, once they get some knowledge, they realize that they made a mistake. So that's why it's saying before choose a guru, you should know what the philosophy is, be sure that you're in a proper disciplic succession. The guru is following regular principles, things like that. By and large, at least, a person would know that this is the principles that are being preached. And many others, some Pranayas, they don't have any spiritual rules. So you can pick up very easy. A little knowledge you can pick up easy. If someone, you know, there may be more complicated circumstances, but someone prays the Super Soul to help, prays the previous Acharya. Main thing is find was a bona fide disciplic succession. Then you at least appear. This is a bona fide succession. Now, within that, then you can choose any guru. At least first get the succession right. Some other question? Yes?
Mm-hmm. So, talking about that this guru is not like running after the disciple. But isn't that kind of what Lord Chaitanya actually is doing? Because no one's getting so. It's like Lord Brahma, it's a problem, but he's actually just taking.
Well, we give people mercy, we give them prasadam. But we give them the books, everything like that. But it's taking a spiritual master is the point when a person is now making a commitment. We go on cultivating people, encouraging them, giving them mercy. But at the point when they want to make a commitment, at that point, then and they accept the spiritual master, it's really upon them to take initiative from that point on. If the guru takes initiative, that's his cause of mercy, but it's the duty of the disciple to take the initiative, to ask the guru questions, to serve the guru, to take, the guru's there, the milk's there, the guru's there to give the mercy, but if someone doesn't want it, just like you say after class, any questions, everyone who sits there. Okay, so everyone. If they had a question, they didn't ask it, but can't blame the guru. So we're giving everyone mercy, but the point of when someone actually makes a commitment, Lord Chaitanya also said that no matter how sinful a person was, whatever, that can all be forgiven. But once they take a commitment, they should sincerely follow. He didn't like it if someone took initiation and then they would not follow the principle. Nityananda was more merciful. He would give people second chances in that. But Lord Chaitanya is very strict. There's no guarantee that one will get back to Godhead in the same lifetime if they're not strict. There's hope. We discussed how, like, for instance, Kala Krishnadas, when he got back to Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya said, look, he had a fall down. So, I don't want to see his face now, I don't want him, something like, pretty heavy, so I don't want him to be serving me anymore, personally. and he had this fallen garment. So it was like he was with 6 years with Lord Chaitanya day and night. Now he couldn't even, was not allowed to get a personal interview at that time because Lord Chaitanya felt let down that he had been swollen. Now he had saved him, pulled him out, but he just wanted to make an example also that he did make a serious mistake and therefore he couldn't enjoy to be the personal servant of Lord Chaitanya anymore after having fallen from that position. But then Lord Nityananda and Jagannatha Pandit and Ramananda Rai, they had a meeting and they discussed and said, look, he's a good Vaishnava, we got a little problem. He's very sincere, we should somehow help him. And he can't stay here, Lord Chaitanya is now like showing anger at him. It's not going to be very conducive if he's here. So they made a plan. They went to Lord Chaitanya and said, can we send someone to Bengal and tell the devotees there that you come back and tell them so they can come here for the Rath Yatra next year because you're here. He said, you can do that. Whatever you decide, I will accept. So then they sent Kala Krishna Das. He went, talked to Mother Sachi and everyone, gave that message. And the devotees heard so many pastimes, 6 years, you know, all the things he did in South India. So it was real nectar, just telling everyone about Lord Chaitanya. And he was, he didn't have any other problem, it was just that one problem that happened. And then when Nityananda Prabhu went back to Bengal, he engaged Kala Krishna Das in his Sankirtan preaching. And even later on, he had a temple, Hare Krishna deities, samadhis there. I think that after some years, Nityananda even authorized him to be a guru. Because his ashram is there and there's still some disciple worshipping the ashram after 400 years. I'm not 100% sure, but it would appear like that. Because definitely, because there was two samadhis. There was his samadhi and he said it was a disciple samadhi. So, a disciple. And so he was totally reinstated even though he had a difficulty. But Lord Chaitanya did make an example. So Lord Nityananda was more merciful. But Lord Chaitanya was very strict about those things. So when we take vows, we should... There's serious steps and we should be very careful. We take commitment like that. It's our duty to serve the spiritual master. You're taking voluntarily the vow, and I'm going to now serve the guru, ask questions of the guru, take instructions from the spiritual master, so that in this way I can become fully Krishna conscious. The guru can't force anyone. We don't force anyone. If they want to, they don't want to follow, we don't have, you know, we can't force them. We can only priest people. That's why then a guru becomes almost helpless to a certain extent. He can preach to some extent. That's his mercy. He goes and preaches and tries to encourage. But usually other devotees, they help also and get a person who's in Maya to be reinstated. Sometimes it's a combination. But it's purely the duty though is the disciples to serve. If the guru does, or other Vaishnavas, that's their mercy. So there's two different things. One is when you take a vow and, on that level, and the other is generally preaching. But still, even what you're saying, even they didn't follow, but Nityananda and others still gave mercy and re-involved. So Nityananda's original guru. So the guru is so merciful, but although it's the duty of the disciple to serve, still the guru sometimes is going and engaging the disciple and preaching and getting the disciple on the line. But as far as Vedic culture is concerned, that's maybe Lord Chaitanya Nityananda's mercy. As far as Vedic culture is concerned, it's the disciple's duty. Not specifically the guru's duty. It's the guru's mercy, not his duty.
I have a question about this Kali Krishna. So in Tanya, later on, like, Subrindavan, Balabhadracharya was his servant, but he also had other servants along, assisting. Yeah. So there's not mentioned much about him, but his name was also Krishnadas, as far as I know. different.
Hare Krishna. Everyone, it's all right? Let's hope. We had a big Rath Yatra festival in Calcutta, about hard to say, but some police say 4 million. Take conservative estimate, probably 1 million. But it was a Sunday, so Sunday there was no office crowd. You can imagine Sunday, the shops are closed, everything's closed, empty streets. But streets were all crowded with people, and they'd all come out just for the Rath Yatra. Three gigantic chariots, each about 17 meters high. Five floats. Whole procession goes about 2 kilometers. Just the procession. You can't see. I'm in a Jagannath Rath. Baladev's in the beginning. I can never see Baladev Rath for half the Rath Yatra is out of sight so far ahead. And ahead of Balaram, they have these floats and other things going on, which you can never see those. So, Prabhupada requested to make Calcutta Rath Yatra the biggest Rath Yatra. So now it's becoming very established, and they publish in the Indian television Rath Yatra. In Calcutta, they show the Calcutta Rath Yatra. In all India, they show Calcutta and Puri. Because Puri is the original place, but gradually Calcutta is also getting coverage. And every year we had, since we had the Soviet, during Gorbachev's time, we had the Soviet Consul General sweep the road for Jagannath. That was a major thing in India at that time, you know, during the Soviet time. The communists were strong in the eastern, in Bengal, and it was a big thing. Here's the Russian, you know, ambassador sweeping the road before Jagannath. It was like, you know. So from that time, they've been inviting, during the French Revolution, 200th anniversary, they had the French Consul General, and they had different people. This year, the governor of the state had agreed to come inaugurate, but suddenly he canceled, said he was indisposed. So there was a crisis, who to get to come. So this year he invited us, the first Japanese sannyasi with an ovary. Bhanu Swami. So one newspaper gave a headline, he said, this year, no kutnitik, no diplomat, but the word diplomat, the way they translated it, it was like kind of, in the way we use diplomacy, no crooked diplomat, the type of thing, no diplomacy, no practitioners of diplomacy this year, only pure sadhu, when they inaugurate, something like that. So Bhanu Maharshi had to wear a special turban with 12 pearls, jewels, for the occasion. They went out and bought a ready-made turban to get them in the store. It was a turban store. I didn't even realize that you can really nice turban, and they put all brooch and pearls in it. So then he had prepared a speech in Japanese. And then no one else there knew Japanese, so then they had already written what the speech was, and then he gave the speech in Japanese, and then they read out in English what the speech was. And then, I used to translate that into Bengali, Dr. Chumar. So it was very well attended. A lot of people liked it. People come forward to pull all their grass. Then, they have a 7-day festival in the park. It's been, it's a very big complex, big temple. They build in the park, they build a temporary temple, at least 25 meters high temple, big dome, out of cloth. They should have made it out of bamboo and chitai, a special kind of like a temple, about half the size. They have a temple room. the people come and get darshan. It's all in the park, just build it. You know, there's a big pandal for the stage program. It holds about 5,000 to 10,000 people. Then there's Fire Yagya, Bhakti Vidya Purnamaras. He was born to the Gurukul students at Fire Yagya. Every day there were people, and there was 7 booths for prasad distribution. Something like 63 tons of prasad there was to be. Every night, 50,000, 100,000. And the floats are put on display, so people, the floats are moving. So they had Agasura, with the cowherd boys entering the mouth, and Krishna is standing there, watching, and Agasura's eyes are like, blinking and moving. People watching. They had Lord Chaitanya doing Gundicha marching, so he was scrubbing one column. And a simple movement. People, and that was 5 scenes like that. There was one scene where karma, it was called karma. Someone was eating different unmentionables and then turning half human and half some animal and things like that. So they had that, they had bookstalls and reception for life members and a question and answer booth. I sat there, Subhag Maharaj was there, Bhakti Sri Maharaj, Tatpur Maharaj. It's quite amazing. They ask very, very good questions. I mean, you really get put on the spot, you know, there's 200 people standing there. They come up with some foul questions. Like they all read the books and they ask these kind of tricky questions. You know, you don't get people come up and say, what's the white mark on your nose? They're all asking, you know, very penetrating. Or at least, you know, maybe they'll ask, well, what's the difference between Christ and Krishna, or things like that. You get a few questions, but most of it's quite philosophical. So like this, there's a whole, just takes up the whole park. They have cooking there non-stop, and they have put a drama on every night. So that goes on for 7 days, and then there's a return route, and the return route goes back in the park to the temple. We go by a different route, so we cover a different part of the town. We get almost as many people, maybe 2/3 to 2/3 as many people. So you get 600,000 to 700,000 people just come out, going around. So we had a nice festival. We had another Rath Yatra in Hyderabad on the Purnima day. People are a little bewildered still in Hyderabad about what to do with Rath Yatra, but Calcutta, they're all trained up. They fight to get to the rope. In fact, you have to always be on, the people are such a competition to get the rope. Everyone in Calcutta knows that if you touch the rope, you go back to Godhead, sooner or later. So everybody wants to get to the rope. And sometimes there's so many people trying to get to the rope, they trip over each other, and all of a sudden you're going at full speed, people are pulling, there's a ball of people and the tires are going, there's big steel wheels rolling, and suddenly it's like, brake! Untangle the pile. See who's on the bottom of the pile. So it's always excitement. So it's not so wild in Hyderabad, but we get about 10,000 people to come and pull the rath, and there were enthusiasts. Many people along the road were watching and participating and doing worship to the deities. They come forward with plates with coconuts and incense and things. It's very nice. The temple was packed with people at the end, waiting for the deities. And they have a competition there among certain students, taking tests in the Bhagavad Gita, so they give out awards. Then we went and Coimbatore, they all said the Rath Yatra there. There, in the center of town, they take you on about a 4-kilometer route, and the wires are so low, they just, for 6 hours, they just take all the wires off the street. All the people that have no electricity. You don't have to take the top down only twice where there's some high tension wire they can't take, but all the little house wires that are kind of going crisscross. Because it's hard to imagine what it would be like in Denmark where everything's underground cables and things. And the people, they were very enthusiastic there also. And then we just went to, there was a Rath Yatra in London also, very nice, maybe 5-10,000 people pulling the Rath. Shiva Maharaj and Angadur Maharaj and many other nice devotees were there having very nice kirtans. A big panda in the park with different programs going on. It was a nice program. So basically I came to Europe, this is my time in India, I'm supposed to be back in Mayapur, but there's a meeting tomorrow in London regarding the temple in Mayapur. So I wanted to, I came up for that, but since the Rath was so close, I just came up a few days early, took some association with Sri Hare Krishna Maharaj. Discussed about some things with him regarding the Mayapur project, and then tomorrow I have to go for this 2 days of meeting with architects in London, and then I have to go back to Mayapur, where maybe in sometime, Krishna willing, after Radhastam, will be coming to Europe again. But it's very kind of you to have me here when we have the darshan at one time with this new Shiva's Angam. Everyone here spontaneously dancing, it's like in Shiva's Angam, they're dancing. Hare Krishna.